Hi, I'm Scott Martin from Bonsai Matsu, and this is the Bonsai Stuff Podcast. We are well into autumn now. This is episode 16 for 2024, and I have this big pin oak in the back of my yard that drops about, I don't know, maybe a million leaves every hour on the hour. And I can tell when autumn's over because on the very last day of autumn, it drops its last leaf. And that for me is a signal that there's lots of work to be done around the yard. We are right on the cusp of starting the black pine work now. I'm just trying to finish up with a few of the other trees around the yard, a few cedars, that sort of thing that just needed the last little tidy up to be made look pretty. And then it's black pine season for me. So I wanted to wrap up this episode of the podcast with a question that was asked of me recently, and I sort of gave a bit of a rushed answer. Someone asked me what advice would I give, or what would you tell a beginner, someone who's fresh? And I was right at the end of a demo, and I feel like I didn't give it enough time, and it's been on my mind. So I want to use this episode of the podcast to talk about a few things and give a few tidbits to people that maybe can apply to all of us. When I read through it and made my notes, I thought, yeah, well, that applies to me still now. So this one should be interesting. And also just a bit of housekeeping admin. My Juniper Intensive that was running has had a date change. So if you're interested in the Juniper Intensive and you hadn't booked it yet, there's a date change, so check out the website bonsaimatsu.com and you'll see it there. But anyway, let's get into the podcast. I love this podcast. I take it very seriously, and I truly appreciate and don't take for granted the importance that it has in people's life. You know, I spoke with people even today and they were talking to me about different things on the podcast, and I get messages all day, every day, and people reach out to me because of this podcast, and it means a lot to me. So when I decide to focus on a topic or talk about something, it's got to be something which is honest, factual, and really important to me. And this question, that what would I tell a beginner, it might sound like, you know, oh, I'm going to breeze past this one, I'm not interested. But really, it applies to everyone in bonsai, and it is something that can't be broken down to a three word answer. You know, enjoy bonsai. It just doesn't. It's not that easy. You know, it's it digs a bit deeper. So I sat down with a pen and paper, and I thought, what would I tell a beginner? What would I go back and say to somebody that's just fresh, that just walks in the door, that's got the bug like this fella had that glint in his eyes that we all know, you know, where they're going to end up with, you know, a couple of hundred trees, not just one or two. They're going up with a couple of hundred, and he really wants to make sure that he's on the right path, and he does everything he possibly can to get there as quickly as he possibly can. So what I tell the brand new person, that glint's in the eye, they've got that ambition, got that drive. And the first thing I wrote down was, never forget it's about the tree and it's not about you. And that's really important. I think that resonates with me across the board, that these trees that we get the love from and the responsibility to look after and care for and maintain and style, and we get so much enjoyment out of doing it. If our focus is on us and what we get out of it, then we might be a little bit inconsiderate as to what's the right thing to do and when's the right time to do it. So you'll find that you might compromise, you might cut corners, you might rush, and that's when the ultimate price gets paid. Not for you, you'll be fine. You'll wake up tomorrow, but the tree suddenly starts to suffer or things go wrong with it. And by learning the right way to do things and keeping that focus on the tree means that you can do drastic things. I had a workshop the other night. We had a black pine that was about as maybe thick as your thumb, maybe a little bit thicker. It's 1.2 meters tall, and the owner Matt wants to fold this thing in half. And I said, all right, well, yeah, we can do it. It's a young tree. It's flexible. It's a good time of the year. Things are slowing down. It's not pushing new buds. It's got nothing flowing through it. The water had been held back for a day prior to doing it. We applied all the right techniques. We kept the focus on the tree and we stopped at certain points and we kept going, going, going. And next thing you know, it's folded over on itself. And there was no cracking, no breaking, no damage. But we applied, you know, all the stuff that we have to do when we do these things, you know, raffia, heavy wire and slow and steady techniques and bending the fibers and whatever else. But you can't forget about the tree in all this. You know, you can want the tree to be folded in half. You can want to turn it into a pretzel. But it's not about what you want to do. It's about how you can do it in conjunction with the tree so the tree continues taking steps forward. No point getting a tree folding in half, snapping it, and suddenly going, well, now I've got a tree that's absolutely useless. Yeah, it might survive the process, but it's not going to have the design that you want, and you really just destroyed something that you didn't need to by not focusing on what the tree's about and pushing your agenda more than others, I suppose. So then the other things I wrote down were, if you've got questions, seek answers. And that's really, really important that you need to have. I talk about the bonsai network, you know, your crew that you talk to, the people that you reach out to, the person that you send messages to, the people that you answer messages from and give advice to and provide, you know, stimulation when it comes to the bonsai world. That's what you need. You need that network. You need, if you've got questions, don't just sit there. And, you know, when you do seek answers, make sure it's from the right source and reliable source, a good source. And often, you know, we all know the dangers of the internet. And you go down a rabbit hole with these things and follow the wrong advice. Well, again, go back to point one, never forget it's about the tree. So the advice that you're given should always have that in as a major consideration. And, you know, if you're talking about doing something pretty drastic to a tree and the person giving you the advice doesn't say, hey, how's the health of the tree going, or has everything been okay, with it been any issues, or what have you done, tell me about repotting times and fertilizing and strength of the tree. If the person you're asking doesn't ask all that information of you, or doesn't seek that information, then, you know, I'm not sure that they're focusing on point number one. Never forget it's about the tree and not about you. Another thing I'd go on about would be to take lots of photographs and document stuff. It's easy when you've got a few trees. I'm certain that everybody listening to this podcast, and maybe people are still doing it now, but I guarantee when you first start this crazy bonsai journey that we are on, a lot of time you'll spend documenting and photographing, and there's apps you can get that'll help you and store the information. You know, your phones these days store, you know, 1,000,001 photos on them. So scrolling back through them, I find it's relatively easy to go and say, oh, I wonder what – I would have worked on that this time of the year, you know, 2 years ago. I wonder what that looks like. Jump in there, do a search. All right, tell me – bring up all photos from 2 years ago. Scroll through there, a couple of flicks with a finger, and bingo, there's the tree, and I can have a look at it and go, oh, okay, look at where it was and look at where it is now. That's actually done pretty well because – you know, that plan that we talk about putting in place, you know, having a photograph or a document there that you can refer back to, it's brilliant. I remember getting given trees by people where the owners had passed away and these trees got started, you know, a long time ago, back in the days when you had film cameras and everything was stuck onto a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil had the note scrawled beside it, what was done and when it was done and whatever else. And I remember seeing these photos of these trees, these sticks, these little whips, and taken with these photos, the camera photos, and that have been developed and lovingly put into these folders and stored for years and years and years. And I look at where those trees are at now and think, wow, that's really developed quite a lot. But having that history there was really important for me to get an idea of where the person's mind was at and what was being developed with that tree. But also from the owner's point of view, I'd imagine there must have been a massive sense of pride that was there right to the last breath that, you know, you've taken something and you've developed it this whole way to become this amazing specimen of a bonsai that's changed so much that as you've grown as a person, as you've aged, as you've developed, this bonsai has done the same thing with your due diligence and your care. And I reckon that would be one that I'd really, really push. It's good for learning, but it's also good for your own personal development. Another thing I wrote next, these are sort of, as I was, you know, spewing out all these ideas, the next one was do everything you can to the best of your ability. Don't do anything half-assed. You know, if you feel like you're cutting a corner, if you're not putting wire on the tree correctly, if you're not pruning it with the sharpest scissors that you possibly could have, if your tools are rusty and full of sap, you got to stop. You got to do those little things, the one percenters that I talk about that make such a big difference. When you've got a tree contained in a pot, in some kind of vessel that limits its potential root growth and its ability to seek out whatever it needs whenever it needs it because it's contained, then the little things can become massive things to it over time. You know, if you do choose to use chemicals to spray your trees and it's been a long time and you've seen aphids on the trees and you still haven't sprayed them, well, why haven't you sprayed them? You know, what's stopping you from doing it? Like, it doesn't take that long, you know. I talk about things being simple and repeatable, and if they're simple and repeatable, then you'll do them. I met with someone and we were having a good chat, and we were talking about powered sprayers that make spraying your trees a breeze, and whether you're, you know, applying a pesticide, fungicide, or whatever it is that you're using them for to spray, by going from a hand pump version to a spray pack, when your trees get to a certain threshold, like they get to a certain size or a certain number in the collection, I tell you, going from that hand pumper with a couple of litre canister on it that you have to refill about 15 times to go around your whole collection, you end up with forearms like Popeye from pumping this thing, and you're sick to death of it by the end of it, that you, instead of spraying maybe on a monthly basis, you might suddenly become 6 week or 8 week. You know, you sort of blow things out twice as much because you can't be bothered, because it's not easy. It's not repeatable because it takes a lot of time and effort. So, you know, I talked with this fella Bruce about this powered spray that I had. Holds 9 litres. It's easy. It's still light enough to carry around the yard. You plug the battery in this thing, man, it smashes it out. Like, it's just so easy to turn off and on, and there's, you know, you fill it up a couple of times and you're done for all your hundreds and hundreds of trees, and it just makes it not a delight, but it just makes it easy. And it means that, you know, if you do fall into a regiment where you want to do something at a certain period of time, after a period of time, then you can do it, because it's not going to be something which you have to allocate 4 or 5 hours to. You can allocate 30 minutes to it and it's done. It's a job that's knocked on the head really, really quickly. So doing everything to the best of your ability and making sure that it's simple and it's repeatable makes a massive difference to the way that you can care for your trees. All right, so now, what would I tell a beginner? Now, this one is one that I wish I'd been told myself, and I think that everybody that I see come through my workshop, let's say the vast majority, not everybody, I don't put everyone in the same bucket, but vast majority of people are just like me, and they get the bonsai bug, and something goes wrong with your chemical balance in your brain, and you start acquiring every single tree that you can get your hand on. You go berserk. You walk through a nursery like you're trying to fill Noah's Ark with one of every species of these things, sometimes two or three, and your collection suddenly gets to a point where it explodes. And it literally explodes from, you know, a handful of trees to 50, 100 of these things. But it's still manageable, right? When you first buy these trees, often, you know, you start with sticks in pots, and then you develop to getting beautiful trunks that really might need some branching structure, and then maybe somewhere down the track you get a more mature or advanced tree or something like that. But this part, when it explodes, you generally don't have a lot of work to do, right? So you might buy them mid-season. It's not repotting time, and they've got a few branches, a few things here and there. You get them and put them in the workshop or you on your bench in the garage and do about 3 minutes worth of cutting, and you're like, yeah, done, and a bit of wire on it, a couple of minutes, bang, presto. Oh, that's so easy. next day you're out. You're smuggling in trees when you come home down the driveway under your jacket so your partner doesn't see them, and you get flogged to death. But you end up with these things all over the place. And at the start it seems easy, but then they start to develop and they start to grow and they start to mature, and the rule of 1 to 2 kicks in, the guideline. You know, one branch turns into 2. So where there's 10 branches, there's 20. Where there's 20, there's 40. Where there's 40, there's 80. And you see how this is going to grow on the years. It's just going to get more and more and more and more. And you want different species. Like, you want one of this and one of that and one of this and one of that. And so, like, you end up with a whole concoction of these trees that you may not necessarily love, you may not adore, you may not see the bonsai in the tree that you've acquired, but you've got the variety, you've got the species. All valid. Like I said, I'm here, I'm at the confession booth with the rest of you admitting that this was me. So don't think that I'm on my ivory tower pointing my finger at you saying you shouldn't have done that, because I never did it. I did it. I had way too many trees that I didn't enjoy, that I look back at them and you think, wow, that's really not for me, because it's not got there's no bonsai in there. It's just a stick in a pot. And just because it's got that name tag on it doesn't mean that it's something I'm excited about, or something that I want to evolve or develop, or, you know, make into something that I spend 40, 50 years of my life developing. So you don't need to have one of every species. You don't need to fill the ark. Because, you know, if there's something that pops up later on down the track, then it's by all means, you can start expanding the collection, but don't jump into it straight away. Now, this next part's going to sound a little bit moronic compared to what I've just said, but you need to have enough trees to stay busy. All right, so on one hand I'm saying don't buy too many trees, and when I say don't buy too many, you know what I mean, don't go berserk, don't buy hundreds. But buy enough to be busy, because if you get that bug and you're passionate and you want to work on the trees, they need time. That's the biggest thing that your trees need between major work or having work done to them. They need time to recover. They need time to be allowed to grow and do what they're going to do as a tree. So when you're constantly working the trees because you don't have enough in your collection, let's say you've got 5 and you're rotating through one a weekend, by the time week 6 comes around, you're back on tree number 1. That's not enough time. 6 weeks isn't enough time for those trees to relax. Get asked a lot, how do I look after so many trees in my yard? And the main reason I can do it is because they often get worked once to twice a year, and that's it. I'm a great believer that when you work them, you make them look brilliant. You go back to that earlier point, do everything to the best of your ability, make the trees look as magnificent as they possibly can. But going back to point number 1, I don't forget it's about the tree and not about me. So I will always allow the tree that time to rest and recover, build its strength up, maybe get a bit ugly, get a bit shaggy, you know, extend the branch structure. I'll let it do all that stuff. So then when I do bring it into the workshop and work on it, I know that it's in peak condition, and I know that it's something that's going to take that step forward that I want it to make. So make sure when you do get the bug, the figure I have in my head as a good number of trees for someone who's keen on bonsai is about 20. It's enough to keep you busy with watering. It's enough to keep you busy when it's repotting season. It's enough to keep you busy with your fertilizing. You know, it's enough to, if you've got a busy job, you can walk around 20 trees having your cup of coffee or tea in the morning before you take off for work. When you come home, it's not a chore. You don't have to spend an hour walking around the yard. It's just a couple of minutes glancing over them. Yep, everything looks great, cool, no worries. Then when you want to work on them, there's enough there to work on sort of one a week to get you pretty much into the, you know, 1 to 2 times a year cycle for these trees, and let them do their thing in between. You're not going to blow the budget. You don't have to have a million pots in the yard, and it's a really great foundation. You can cover a lot of species. You can get multiples of the same species if you do fall in love with a certain type of variety of tree. You can make sure that you tick the boxes for having natives and exotics and deciduous and fruiting and, you know, whatever it is that you want to have in your collection. And I think that 20 is a 20 is a nice round number that'll give you different sizes as well. You're going to get some large, some small. You don't have to build hundreds of benches in the backyard. You don't need an elaborate watering system. can be pretty basic, you know. And if you do have to drop them off for tree sitting somewhere to go on a holiday, it's one trip in the car normally. One trip in the car to fill your boot up and get it all done and you're right, you're set, you're laughing with it. So I would think that's like I said, it's not trying to reverse what I said first up in this section, but it's really important to have it. And while we're talking about the variety of trees, consider natives. Don't just consider them. Get involved with natives. Our Australian natives, oh my God, I can't beat that drum loud enough. I love them. There is such a good variety. You know, I look through the shows that I've been, the Bonsai Open that I was recently involved with, and the natives were on display there. My God, amazing. As well as the exotics were, they're all at the same level, you know. And I go along to talk at Bonsai clubs now, and one of the questions I ask is, you know, how many people have got natives? Vast majority of people have got natives in their collection now. It used to not be the case, but there's so much experience and availability of stock out there now that getting involved in natives, one, it's lovely because they're our trees. They're from where we are. But push it a little bit further and try and get local natives to you. Wherever you are, look for natives that come from your region and get those as bonsai. And I promise you, you're going to be so surprised. You put a native next to an exotic in our environment, or especially your local environment where you're from, you put a local native next to an exotic that's from anywhere around the world, and you watch that native develop, and you will look back on it in 3 or 4 years' time and go, oh, my God, look at the trunk, look at the branches, look at the structure, compare it back to the exotic. Exotics are lovely. I have vast majority of exotics in my yard, and I always will. But when you compare the development plan and process for the local natives, it's insane. It is just insane. If you want to rush a bonsai, if you want to get to the end as quick as you can, work with a local native. That's my advice that you should. Next part of the podcast comes down to you and your skill level. And I think the first step you should take as someone that's chafing at the bit to get good at bonsai and really sink your teeth into it is to learn the fundamentals as soon as possible. Get in and get the basics down pat. Work out things like, you know, repotting your trees, soil medium that's used by good growers around your area that are highly successful, that develop trees that you really like. Work out how to prune things and what to do after pruning, how to maintain when you cut branches that are a decent size. What do you do with it? Otherwise, what are the repercussions? Like, will there be rot on this tree? How do I prune this? At what time of the year do I prune it? Do I let it grow? When do I fertilize this thing? Like, is it too much fertilizer? Not enough fertilizer? Should I give it a bit more at this time of the year, or should I hold it back a little bit at this time of the year? It's all watering. Like, how do you keep these things alive? That's the most fundamental thing you've got to get right. And there's not one answer to how to develop really good bonsai or to keep them alive for a century. It's a lot of things that you've got to do in conjunction. That's the fundamentals. That's what you've got to get right ASAP. And that takes a bit of work. Internet's a great place to start. It's a dangerous place to start because your microclimates that I've got to what you have to what someone on YouTube's telling you, it all varies. It all changes significantly. You can give a general gist of things, like, you know, for instance, repotting time for pines, you know, and or decandling time for pines. Let's talk about that because it's topical. I've just talked about it with people very recently, and depending on the place that you are in the world, and I'm going to make this very broad, so please don't write any dates down, but decandling is dependent upon the growing period that you've got. So if you're in an area that's a lot colder and has a shorter growing period, then your decandling time might be a hell of a lot earlier than someone that has a really super long growing period that you know only stops for a very short period of dormancy. So their decandling period might be a hell of a lot later than someone who, like me, has a medium period of time where I've got a reasonable growing time. Like, our seasons in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, they're pretty much bang on. When it says it's spring on the calendar, it's spring. When it says it's autumn on the calendar, it's autumn. You know, and so when you tick a box and say, okay, you should be growing now, it's spring, you look out and go, yeah, it's actually just started, like very recently. Give or take a little bit, I'm being a bit facetious, but give or take, we're very close to it. So therefore, our decanning window, because our growing period's medium, is at a certain point of time. So if you're in a colder period compared to me, your decanning might be a lot earlier than me, and if your growing period is a lot longer than mine, then your decanning period may be after mine. So it's really important that you'll hear people talk about things like repotting and pruning and fertilizing, and there's some real basics that you can work with, but you need to adapt these things to local environments. And you know, I think that by doing and looking locally to where you are, exploring the nurseries and sort of maybe, you know, reaching out on some I'm very nervous saying this, but reach out on some Facebook pages and maybe, you know, reach out to people. And when you see the trees, doesn't mean that they're real, but you might find that there's someone in your area that you can connect with. Maybe someone's doing classes in your local area, like I do, like workshops or classes or whatever it is. Reach out. You know, a new fella came in the workshop recently, connected with the four other people in the workshop, and bang, his bonsai network's grown by four people because he connected. He's a local person to sort of where these other people are. So a lot of stuff that we talked about applies to all of us, and it was great. It was great to see that light bulb moment where people sort of connect and become part of it. But I think that's really important that, you know, you're learning the fundamentals, look locally, stick and try and find somewhere you can develop your skills. You know, like things like, you know, wiring is a magic skill to have. It's one of the most important skills that you'll ever have. If you can be a good wirer, I guarantee at some point or another your trees will develop to the point where they will be absolutely bloody magnificent. But other things like your skill level for wound management, you know, that's something that is absolutely a fundamental for how you look after your trees. It might not seem important at all. And if you're listening to this going, geez, I'm not sure about wound management, well, that's a skill. Like being able to cut off something significant off a tree, have the tree keep taking steps forward, not have wood rot in the trunk of the tree, and not have any damage done to the tree over a period of time, and to get that wound to seal to the best of your ability and the best of the tree's ability, That's something that you need to develop. Repotting is one of those skills that is, I can't express how important it is. You know, if you listen to this podcast for more than about 3 minutes, you would have heard me mention in every single one how important the strength of the tree is and how it comes from the roots of the tree. And that all stems from good repotting. That all stems from repotting right. Mediums, process, a procedure for tying it in the pot, securing it, you know, pot size, selection, all the stuff that goes with it. It's an absolute bloody important skill for bonsai that you've got to get right. If you can't get that right, then forget the rest of it, really. And that's where you need to be consistent. It needs to be a simple process, like I said at the start with the spray pack. Repotting or any of the things that you do have got to be simple. If I said to you that repotting a simple tree coming out of a pot was going to take you 3.5 hours, then I'd reckon you'd go, well, I've got too many trees when I've got 5 trees. But if I said to you, and this is actual fact, that doing a school class recently, repotted 10 trees from black tubs, big size, 25 centimetre black pots for junipers, going into pots, and I admit I'd done a bit of pot preparation beforehand, putting the mesh in and stuff like that, but all in all, I had an hour. 10 got done in an hour, but hands-on process after talking with the kids and packing up, it was 40 minutes. So I was averaging 4 minutes a tree to get these things out, sort the roots out, get them in the pot, refill it with medium and start doing dressing on it. So I reckon that's ridiculously fast, and I wouldn't recommend that. But if you can learn the skill of repotting, not be afraid of repotting, and see it as a real opportunity to improve the health of the tree, then you go into it with a complete different set of eyes and mindset that you will push that tree to become stronger than what it ever has been. So new, develop your skill set and look at those, look at the fundamentals and get them down pat as quickly as you can. And just have a thirst for knowledge. I feel at times like I get myself a bit set in my ways because I've done things and got a good response for them over such a long period of time. So I force myself when I hear or see something different or a different technique, I don't just wash it out of the way and say, that's not how I do it, so I'm going to ignore it. I try and have this thirst for knowledge when it comes to bonsai about how things are done and how things work and why they work like this and is there an improvement that I could make in my system and or a medium that I use or whatever it is. Is there a different way of tying a tree into a pot that I should consider that's going to be more viable than the method that I use? And so I do it, I test it, I give it a go and I look at the tree and go, yeah, look, it's I can do it, I can see the merit in it. Is it better than what I'm doing? No, it's not, but it's not worse than it. So, yeah, it might be different people choose to do things a different way. It doesn't mean that it's worse or my way is better. It's just a different way of doing it, and it gives exactly the same result. So as long as it can be simple, easy, repeatable, then I'll keep going. If there's an area for an improvement, then yeah, by all means, I'm gonna jump at it. Right, I just had a nice glass of water, fresh myself after that. I get so excited about this. I don't know if you can tell, but I get so passionate about helping with a path for people for bonsai. And it's, you know, it's not like, you know, follow the gospel according to Scott. It's just like I think that once you can get on a path, you can take such great leaps forward. And those great leaps forward, I know how I feel because of bonsai, and I know what it does for me, and everything about me, my mental state, my well being, my enjoyment of being outside in my backyard, my meeting other people, my social side of things. It's amazing, and I get so much out of it. So, if I can help in any way, give just a little shaving of what I get out of it by this podcast and by talking to you all, then, oh my goodness, I can't tell you how good that makes me feel. It really, really doesn't. Anyway, so let's wrap this baby up. The last section we talked about having a thirst for knowledge, open-minded, all the rest of it, right? I want to start this one with, again, might seem like a bit of a contradiction, but there's merit to it. You've got to be consistent. You've got to be really consistent. I cannot tell you how many trees I killed in my early bonsai journey because I was irresponsible. I forgot some of these fundamental rules. I forgot, you know, it's not about me, it's about the tree. I forgot about learning all the fundamentals. I had this thirst for knowledge, yep, tick that box, but I would learn something, I would read it, I would hear it, I would apply it. And don't forget, this is showing my age, it's before the internet, so there wasn't this fast flow of information like you can get now. Like, there was no text messages. You couldn't message someone and say, hey, listen, I've just read this, what do you reckon? Is it a good idea to do? There's no bonsai network for me back then. It's just I'd read a book and go, geez, okay, so you repot your Scots pine at this time of the year, perfect, done. I mean, yep, that's a month, I'm going to do it. Next thing you know, a couple of weeks later, didn't really know about the technique for repotting, aftercare, the whole box and dice, and you know, it's dead. And it's like, well, wonder why that died. Something else, not me. Read another book. Oh, now you do this with that. All right, bang, I'm into it. Do it straight away. Another tree dead. So you've got to be consistent. You know, if you start at a path and someone says to you, or someone that you build your relationship with, your educator, the mentor, the person that's going to guide you on this beautiful bonsai path, and they say to you, look, you ask them, hey, you know, I've been told, you know, if you've got questions, seek answers. Yep, no worries. All right, so question is, when should I repot my natives, Australian natives? And the person that you respect, that you're seeking information from, that's in your local area, whatever, turns around and says, all right, well, you know, I do mine in October. And you go, yeah, that's cool. I just read that I can do it in in March, so I'm going to do it in March. It's like, cool. Okay, so where's the consistency in what you're applying to yourself? And just because it's, you know, it's March when you're asking the question doesn't mean that's the time you do the work. There's this patience that you've got to build into things, and I haven't even talked about patience yet because the podcast isn't going to be long enough. I think I'm going to run out of time. But you've got to be truly consistent. You've got to allow time from when you do something to see what the results are. So you go from how I love teaching and how I love participating with everybody is it's this process. And I know I've talked about it years ago on the podcast where it's, you know, people come to me and they say, what do I do? And I go, great, no worries. Here's the warm bonds I embrace. Come in. It's okay. Look, I'll help you. What I would do is this. And this is how I do it, and this is the process and whatever. And they'd go, oh, thank God. Thank God, that's what I want. I just want someone to tell me what to do. And it's like, great. They might come back next time, tell me what to do. All right, here's the warm bonds I embrace. You know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this together. And this is, I'm going to help you every step of the way. You know, I'll cut one, you cut one. You know, and let's get there together. And then the next phase is this one where they go, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? And it's like, yeah, you know what? Now it's not a mean bonds I embrace because you're starting to stand on your own 2 feet. It's a slap on the back with me standing beside you saying, I like what you're doing. That's a really good idea. We could do that. And have you thought about maybe doing this as well or this instead of that? Or I can see where you're going here, but you know, here's an alternative. What do you think? And we can sort of work on a plan together. But it's that not me, you know, sort of pushing an approach. It's sort of like participating in an approach. That's step two. The third and final step that I love, and this is when I know I've done good, is when the person comes to me and says, hey, look what I've done. What do you reckon? And that's when I turn around and go, you know what? Bang, gold star. Might not be perfect, might not be exactly what I would have done, but it doesn't have to be. You know, as long as I can see from my perspective that the person's, you know, back to step one, thinking about the tree, you know, their wiring is designed so the pads are, you know, separated so they're all going to get sunlight. It's got a, you know, part of the trunk's visible here. You've got a nice little apex. You've got good Nabari positioning, good selection of front. You know, your branches aren't bar branches. It's nice and staggered and it looks interesting. Fantastic. You know, that's when it turns into a bloody high five instead of a pat on the back because, like, you know, you're learning how to fly. You're a little bird in the nest that's learned how to fly, and that's exactly how I see myself. And I'm very, very mindful. And anyone that probably has reached out to me that listens to the podcast would know exactly that's the way that I do it. If it's what would you do? Great, this is what I would do. If it's like, hey, I'm thinking of doing this, what do you think? Then the answer is very different. It's like, and if it's, hey, look what I've done, it's like, hey, that's awesome. And I don't say that it's just awesome every time just to say that's awesome. It's because genuinely I mean it, because it's not just the shaping that the people have done. It's not the work that they've done. It's the process they've gone through to get to that point, you know, and that's the part that I love. So being consistent, waiting to see the outcome, don't rush what you've done. You've got to be able to repeat whatever it is over time. So, you know, if you do things at certain times, I, you know, and you're fresh to it, maybe document it so you can look back in a year's time and say, okay, in April, late April last year, I did this. And you can look back and go, well, that actually worked, or no, that part didn't work. I probably did it too rush too much. So you don't necessarily have to have someone that's going to be there to guide you along the way. You can also self-educate with it as well. So I think it's really important. This is my next point, is to find someone that inspires you. Find that bonsai person anywhere that you are, from anywhere around the world, and latch onto it. You know, don't mimic, don't copy. You create your own style. Of course you have to, because not every tree is created the same anyway. But be inspired by somebody, you know, and build that connection with that person's trees and that person. Not, it doesn't mean you have to stalk them or chase them down at traffic lights or anything like that, but you can build a relationship with someone and follow their stuff that they do and like what they do, and you know, and use it as inspiration or someone, so something that, you know, you can connect with. You know, there might be someone that you find a bit irritating or a bit, you know, a bit too elitist. then look for someone that connects with you. You might like that. You might like, you know, being tied up and hogbound on the ground and kicked in the guts. But some people don't like that. Some people want the warm embrace of Bonzo and be, you know, sort of led along a path, or they might like, you know, the way someone else talks, or it might be, you know, whatever it is. As long as you can connect with that person and be inspired by them, then I'd think that it's more than reasonable for you to do it. And there's so many ways that we can do this stuff now, and you can do it so quickly that, you know, you can reach out, you can click a like, you can follow, you can subscribe, you can do whatever, and be very close to that person that inspires you. And if you can reach out and be taught by them as well, if they are in your local area, then I'd suggest doing it. And, you know, consider all the points that I've said earlier about consistency and all the rest of it, because finding that one person that will guide you on a path, I think it's the way to go. Another thing you got to do, like a really fundamental one, and I'll whip through these last couple of ones, is think about where you're going to keep your bonsai before you start. If you've got a little balcony, you're not getting much sun, well, hey, sorry, but you're not getting many trees. You can't fit them on there. And if it's, you know, go back to point number one, never forget it's about the trees and not you. If you've got a little balcony, or you've got a courtyard that's overshadowed by the massive trees and you get zero sunlight in there, sooner or later your trees are going to pay the price for it. So before you invest, before you take on the responsibility, before you start this path, think about that as a real basic. Think about watering, and think about how you're going to have holidays, because we all have to. We all need holidays. Like, I love holidays, but we need them. We need as people to be able to get away and break the monotony of whatever it is that we do 9 to 5 and spend time with our nearest and dearest and do new things. And bonsai, if you build this mountain that sits on your back, will be a burden that you will not enjoy, and it's something that you've got to really consider. And it's there are ways you can get around it. There are people you can speak to that will holiday sit for you, but it's definitely something you need to consider. If you work long hours, if you can't be there to water your trees, then how are you going to water the trees? How are you going to give them what they need? Point number one, it's about the trees, not about you. So you then need to develop systems. And if you want to know anything about watering systems, go back a couple of months, you'll hear about bloody 15 of them rabbiting on about watering systems. I'm not going to go into it again now. Join a bonsai club too. They're a great source of inspiration. They're great for sale days. You get access to stock that you wouldn't normally see around the place. They're great for your bonsai crew to develop. You can meet people there, and you don't have to be best mates, but, you know, when you walk through those the foyer door and, you know, it's about bonsai, well, you connect. It doesn't matter. You can be from completely separate worlds, but when you're at the bonsai meetings or you're talking bonsai, whatever, it's so good. I tell you, it's so good later on in your bonsai life to have people that you can talk to about bonsai stuff and you know, have a bit of a laugh with, and you know, that stuff that's, you know, maybe a bit left to center or whatever it is. It's so good for you in so many ways that I reckon bonsai clubs are really good for that sort of thing. Work on the timing based on where you are for things, not just because it's in a book. Like I've told you those horror stories from me in the past, and internet, you know, really it's a lot of places around the world work in zones and categories and whatever else. So, you know, across the states it's all different based on whichever zone you're in. Australia, we talk about it like it's in states, whether states you're in, but even then there's microclimates and there's changes that need to be made to some things that you do. A lot of it can be pretty close, give or take, but there's just that fine tuning you need to do based on exactly where you are and what you do. And to wrap up this podcast is to say, you've got to focus on health, not on design, all right? It's about the tree. I can't push this point enough, that's the only thing I give a stuff about when it comes to my trees is the health. The looking nice, the looking pretty part, I link that to how healthy the tree is going to be. If I've got a cluster of growth that's sort of growing all every which way but loose, and I can get that and I can wire that down, make it look beautiful, but also make that foliage more efficient as a source to provide sugars to the tree through photosynthesizing, then I've achieved the objective for the tree without damaging it, and I've made it look good for me. So if you focus on the health, not the design. The design stuff will come. Don't make it priority number one. Make it priority number 10, somewhere down the track. Work on the health and vitality of the tree. Get it so it's going to outlast time, and then start making your decisions, because I guarantee you'll have so much more that you can do with that tree than when you've got one that's teetering on the edge of not making it. So, and that's why I wanted to come back to this, because the 2 second answer that I gave, I felt like I did disservice to the person who asked the question about what I would tell someone as a beginner. And when I started planning this podcast, I thought, oh, I'll talk about this, and that'll give me a good agenda for the podcast. And then I started writing my notes, and I went, it's actually a whole podcast in itself, because it's so important. And a lot of this stuff, it's nice for me. I found it sort of reinvigorating to write this stuff out, and cathartic to go through it all and to say it and to hear it, because it's a reminder for me too. When, you know, I'm looking at my trees and I'm doing things around the yard, or I'm working with people, it's a nice refresher for me. And I hope you use it that way as well, that, you know, some of these things are real basics that we all should follow on and work with in our bonsai lives. And we are done, folks. Thank you for listening in. I really appreciate it. Thank you for the subscribers too to the podcast. It's brilliant. Thank you to the new subscribers too. You know who you are, and it's greatly appreciated. It really is. So thank you very much. And I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. It was interesting for me. Like I said, it was a real process for me to go through, and actually feels like I've got a weight off my shoulders now, because I feel like I shortchanged this fellow who asked the question. And now I don't, because he can play it as many times as he wants, or anyone can, and it can spread this hopefully positive message and some really reassuring stuff to a lot of people, and maybe it makes people's bonsai life that little bit cruisier and a lot happier, a hell of a lot happier than what it would have been without hearing this stuff. So it is a busy time for us now in autumn. I'm going to push the feeding process again. It's your time to go. For me, post decandling, I'm into feeding my black pines now. So if you are listening to this, go for it. We've got another good solid month left of autumn to go, and it's go time. Feed everything. I'm feeding everything in my yard now as heavily as I possibly can, which means lots of tea bags full of that organic fertilizer. And except for the natives, be careful with the natives with fertilizer. Just a disclaimer. But yeah, so get onto it, and it's becoming pine time to start work now as well, to start needle plucking and bud selecting, which you'll see across my socials undoubtedly over the next month or so when it really ramps up. So stay busy, keep your tools clean. I am cleaning my tweezers like crazy at the moment. They are filling with sap from plucking needles, so keep everything nice and clean and sharp. Do it to the best of your ability, as I said a bit earlier in the podcast. Make sure you enjoy it. Enjoy every single process. Don't rush it. And until next time, as always, happy bonsai.